When you think of the technology companies pioneering AI capabilities, you obviously think of OpenAI, Google, Microsoft, even Meta. But there is a TSIA member that has been researching AI capabilities since the late 1950s. Some of the milestones in their AI journey include, in 1997, they created an AI model that defeats Garry Kasparov, a world champion in chess. In 2011, they have an AI model that wins Jeopardy. And today, they have a cloud-based AI model focused on optimizing enterprise workflows. The company, of course, is IBM. I am Thomas Law, the Executive Director of TSIA. Welcome to Tectonic, the podcast where we explore what makes technology business models successful in today's world. Today, I will be joined by Bala Rajaraman, an IBM fellow who is focused on how IBM is deploying AI to improve support service workflows. So let's get the insight engine humming. Welcome, Bala. It's nice to see you. Let's just start here. Can you just provide an overview of your role at IBM?
Yeah, thanks, Thomas, and thanks for the great intro. I'm the CTO for a part of IBM that's called Technology Lifecycle Services. And as such, my role is to look at what business outcomes they're trying to generate and map that to all of the technology evolution that's happening. And obviously, AI is something that's very big in industry. So being able to look at how AI can impact various aspects of support, whether it is customer experience, whether it's our support engineers and their experience, and fundamentally, both IBM's top and bottom lines in terms of adoption of this technology. Over the years, I've worked in almost all parts of IBM, from our hardware to our software to clouds and so on and so forth, and consulting. So it's...
Oh, wow. You've done it all.
Around. Yeah, been around the block.
There we go. That's awesome. Well, before we get into AI capabilities, which is what I really want to talk about, I do want to ask you about the state of technology support organizations, since you are really focused on the support workflows and what's going on in the world of support. And I've heard you talk about this topic on other podcasts. So from your perspective, what are the biggest drivers impacting the priorities of technology support organizations right now?
Yeah, I think there are two that are fairly reasonable, which is when you look at the purpose of support is to provide a great customer experience, satisfaction, and value to the support services that they're buying. I think that's predominant and perhaps the most important thing that drives support and the people who work in support. The second aspect is obviously efficiency and the cost of support in the context of the overall product revenue. So how do we optimize our various processes? How do you optimize the delivery of support so that you can manage it to a certain cost equation? The third one, which I think is really important, is the aspect of support that deals with the people who actually provide support, mm-hmm. our support engineers. And so looking at what are their skills needs, how is the evolution to things like SRE impacting that, the complexity of the processes, especially if you're looking at support being provided in a global organization, what are the concerns there, compliance, privacy, and so on and so forth. The competence and confidence of our support personnel in very stressful situations, because support is often very stressful, especially when you're dealing with mission-critical systems. And the last part is, if you look at technology, I think it has gone from more monolithic systems to very distributed systems, cloud, different end devices, intelligence being spread around. So the ability to have a more comprehensive and cohesive view for complex problem solving, how do we help our engineers do that? So I think when we look at what drives support, it's these three dimensions. One of them is the customer experience. One of them is the cost and efficiency of our delivery. And the third one is, loosely put, empathy for a very critical role of support in the overall product lifecycle.
Yeah, and just kind of reacting to that, I think what's interesting in terms of what's going on with support right now compared to what's going on with technology business models in general, support organizations, as you know, have always been very focused on delivering cost effectively. That is just deep within their DNA, right? What if there's new technology we can use, if there's better process we can use. And now that conversation has come to every part of the technology business model, right? So
yeah,
customer success, sales, right? Everybody's being asked to operate more efficiently. And I think that one of the strengths that support organizations have is the fact that that's already part of their DNA. So that's good. But the other thing I want to put on the table, and I'd be curious your perspective when it comes to support, you mentioned the customer experience. And I think that every support organization I know, they care deeply about delivering the best customer experience they can. The nuance that I'm seeing right now in the current environment is around defending the value of support to customers, especially, you know, premium support type of relationships. The support organizations are really being asked by their customers, okay, yeah, you respond to this ticket quickly, or you did this, or you did that. But, you know, I need to understand the business value of what you're delivering before I renew that support contract or premium support, et cetera. The heat on that is higher right now than I've ever seen historically. I'd just be curious your perspective on that vector.
I think that's a really, really good question. Because interestingly, I think the mark of a good support organization is when that question is actually asked. Because I think at that point, support is doing a good job, which is they're being proactive, they're anticipating situations. So the visibility of support's impact is small because they're doing such a darn good job. And so I think part of that's a challenge we are addressing, right? Which is when we've had clients who have asked the question that, I mean, doesn't look like you guys did much. I mean, I'm paying premium support.
So you're saying the best support organizations have a problem because they're so good that they're almost invisible.
Exactly. And it's like, I mean, there's been three outages, but if you look at the number of problems that have been solved under the covers without visibility in a proactive way, it's 300. I think the onus is on the support organizations to quantify that value, to be able to show all of the things that have been done proactively in an anticipatory fashion, working at the level to minimize disruption. That is the value. The value is not how many critical situations you addressed. It's how many you avoided, which is always a hard thing.
No, that's a great angle. And I think, again, going to the DNA of support organizations, again, they've always been focused on efficiency. They've always been focused on a good customer experience. And just my observation, curious, you know, your perspective. They're also not the type of people that want to crow, you know, and boast about what they've done. So if they did preemptively take care of 300 incidents, that's not their DNA to say, look at what I did. Look at, they just go about their business. And I think you're putting a good point on the table is that organizationally, they're just going to have to be better at quantifying and articulating all the things they're doing so the customers are super clear on the value that's being delivered. So that might be a pivot for some of the support organizations out there. Super interesting. Yep. Well, let's get into the AI piece of it. So, you know, at TSI, we adopted the standard language that exists in the AI world, which is, you know, you're looking for use cases that are below the waterline. And what that means in AI vernacular is just they're mature. We know AI can do this. It's not science fiction. It's not hype. And so what are you seeing in terms of some of the AI use cases for support organizations that are clearly mature, clearly below the waterline?
Yeah. And I think I'll reflect on that based on concrete experience that we've had, right? The first area that I think that has proven value is around helping our support engineers, whether it's looking through complex documentation, whether it's technology about the product, about the process, about things like compliance, because when you deal with compliance and other requirements, depending on what geography you're in, around parts and various other things, the ability to provide historical case information that might actually help them resolve the problem faster, like historical tickets, being able to mine information from collaboration tools. Other more leading edge aspects like sentiment analysis about what is the tone of a ticket? Are we taking too long? What is the level of satisfaction? I think all of those are proven capabilities and we certainly leverage them. I think self-service is an interesting aspect because self-service is something that's been adopted broadly in the industry. I think being able to have chatbots and so on and so forth. But when you look at IT and the enterprise and the criticality of the systems, there are some interesting nuances there because it's not only about self-service, it's also about managing risk effectively. So what we find is that in many cases, clients will take advantage of self-service, but at the same time, they would still want to open a ticket and talk to somebody who's an expert in that field and can give them insights. They have context from prior engagements, et cetera. So self-service is not exactly touchless self-service, but it is context plus touch. And that is actually an area that has been proven as well. Some of the more technical areas, things like log and instrumentation analysis, being able to look at logs that people upload and come up with solutions very quickly, looking at patterns. That's machine learning and AI in many ways. Summarization, when you have complex cases with multiple folks, being able to get quick insights into what is the subject of this and summarize it. I think summarization is something that AI is very good at as well. And the last, but not the least, proactive and insightful conclusions. How do we look at historical data, instrumentation data, system status, configuration information, and be able to create proactive views into potential problems? And taking that forward, look at the broader context across an entirety of a customer base and say, these are patterns of problems that are emerging, and so offer proactive assistance. All of these are proven things that are below the waterline in your vernacular.
So a lot of use cases you put on there, I just want to ask some follow-up questions on a couple of them. So on the sentiment analysis specifically, I mean, I think it's interesting in the world of support, you're working on a case, you may have some notes about what somebody else wrote down about what's going on with the customer or customer input or whatever, but the ability to now bring in, not just look at structured data, but to bring in unstructured data, sentiment from a call, that type of information to help inform the support agents and just a company in general in terms of, hey, here's a customer that clearly is frustrated. We're going to respond differently. I think that is going to be an incredibly powerful use case for support organizations as it becomes more broadly adopted, for sure.
Yeah, absolutely. And this goes back to the point where, I think these are, especially in mission critical situations, these are very stressful things. Critical systems are down. And so understanding the sentiment, understanding how to react to that in an appropriate way becomes an important tool in the toolbox for our support engineers.
And then one of the last use cases you're talking about is just being able to look at a lot of data and information and then sort of proactively make recommendations about what we should be doing. So again, I believe very deeply that most knowledge workers are going to wake up in the morning. I don't care if you're a support engineer, you're a sales account executive, you're a customer success manager, but the models are going to be giving you recommendations on what you should be focused on that day, for sure.
Absolutely.
Right?
Yeah. Absolutely. And I think you're touching on an important thing, because that's exactly some of the things that we're doing with AI is to, how can you provide more value? Mm-hmm. I think at the end of the day, that is what the support function is. And that could be observing certain behaviors of the systems. It could be new offerings that you want to provide. So Yes, you identified a clear value of AI in that context, and it certainly applies to support.
Yeah. You talk about self-support. I'm curious what your perspective, there's so much buzz around digital agents and digital agents interacting with, with customers on our behalf. And you talk to one person, they're like, oh my gosh, this stuff is super mature and we've deployed tons of them with great success. You talk to other people and they're like, man, it's kind of lumpy for us. We're struggling. What, from your experience, what drives success with a digital agent experience if you're deploying it in support?
Yeah, I think that's another really good question. I think there are two aspects to consider. One is a little bit more northbound and one is southbound. From a northbound perspective, I think well-defined problems and well-defined domains, you have a much higher success rate for agents to be able to not only respond, but also take action, because the blast radius is kind of contained. Southbound, an implication of that is that you have good deterministic ideas about what the environment is. It is bounded in particular ways. The places where it gets interesting is in more complex systems. If you look at a typical IT system, it is complex because you might have a CPU, but it could have certain network issues. We've seen a lot of issues in terms of things like the network effects on behavior of things like storage or in terms of compute. And so both of these challenges, it highlights them. One is that your scope is much broader. So to kind of get to what you can act upon or provide information upon requires a lot more capability than what typical claims to success are. And the second thing is the kind of data and instrumentation that needs to be correlated southbound to create some of the decisions that an agent needs to make, either in terms of providing information or even in automating stuff. There are a lot of secondary effects. There are side effects that you have to watch out for. Those are the places where it tends to be a lot more complex, and we have to mature as we go forward to realize the ultimate value of AI.
Is it your perspective that those digital agents will basically eat through some of that complexity, that they'll get better and better at being able to deal with complexity? Is that sort of your expectation?
Yes, I do. And that's not just because of AI technology, right? Because it is because of some of the additional focus that the industry is putting on data quality metadata, context around the data, continuous feedback loops in terms of improvement. All of these are contributing to the effectiveness of AI. And yes, I do believe that there's a progression from an AI perspective. I mean, the whole journey towards AGI, but also all of the underlying capabilities, whether it's governance, privacy, data quality, data engineering. I think all of these fronts are moving. And so I do expect that the number of use cases that can be addressed and the complexity of the use cases will certainly evolve over time, for sure.
Yeah, I think you put an important perspective on the table there, which I don't know if it has come up in previous discussions, which is like with any new technology, I mean, you think about when the internet first started to roll out through enterprise, there's a whole set of scaffolding around, hey, we're going to use the internet. We're going to be connected to stuff. Like, what does that mean? Like, so with security, it's process. What does that mean for, you know, do we have the underlying technologies to support leveraging the internet? What you just said there is, you know, AI in itself is a capability that will mature and get smarter and smarter, but also the scaffolding around it with the enterprise will mature. And that they'll have the processes, the approaches, the, you know, procedures, frameworks, all that kind of stuff to basically say, we know how to effectively and can support deploying this technology. So there's some growth that has to occur there, you know, as people are getting their battle scars around this. I want to turn the lens, because I know you work with customers, so you see it out in the wild in terms of how people are trying to leverage AI and basically what I just said here, they've got to build the muscles and the scaffolding around it. Where do you see companies struggle the most when they start trying to leverage AI capabilities?
Great question. I'll step back to what is the goal of customers implementing AI, right? And I think a way to summarize that to me is like a path to production or a path to productive use. And what that kind of brings in is both dimensions of the challenges, both the business challenges and the technology challenges. So if we parse the business challenges, obviously the important thing is return on investment. And I think we've seen different approaches, I think, spread far and wide and do different projects all over the place or kind of focus on something and go deep in terms of understanding and delivering on the ROI. The second aspect is that I think the struggles are is I think the value of AI comes in when you look at it across a process. What is the end-to-end outcome and processes deliver outcomes and how do you apply AI strategically in various aspects of the process to transform it? Applying AI in individual tasks can sometimes diminish the overall return on investment. The third area from a business perspective is value of AI on an individual project might be limited, but you have to have a paths to scale out. So how do you set up an operating model? And that includes a lot of the components of the previous discussion, whether it's picking the right model, understanding the right experience, having a design philosophy, creating the right experiences. How do you scale out an operating model to evolve AI and scale it out to a variety of use cases in your organization? And last but not the least, skills, the adoption, the ability to convince people to both not only consume AI, but contribute to AI, because I strongly feel that AI is not a tool. It is something that evolves over time. It gets smarter. It gets more contextual. And people have to contribute to do that. And so there's a culture change element to that. So these are kind of the, some of the business dimensions. From a technology dimension, one that we mentioned is data. I mean, quality of data, access to data, in a governed, thoughtful manner, all of the criteria around data. The ability for security, governance, and managing risk around AI is something that should not be an inhibitor. It should be something that is kind of factored in as you start building some of these solutions. The ability to measure the value that it provides, both technically as well as from a business perspective. So KPIs that drive continuous improvement. There's an infrastructural part of AI that's a challenge as well, which is when you look at AI, it touches the entire stack, whether you're talking about compute and GPUs, networking and the performance of networking, storage, and the volumes of storage, how do they all come together from a system and the optimization of that system for performance of AI and the cost management of AI is an important struggle that many of our clients have as well. And last but not the least is the rate of change, right? There's always a new shiny model or approach that comes up. And so how do you stay the course in terms of delivering value versus doing the next experiment? So that's another thing that people, that at least in my experience, that many of our clients and enterprises struggle with.
So if anybody, you know, listened to your response to that and they haven't started their AI journey, that's why they haven't started, because they're like, it's so overwhelming. There's so much I got to worry about. But I think I want to have some follow-up questions, though, because I think, first of all, you know, in terms of how people are deploying, I want to put three profiles on the table here and get you to kind of react to them. So one profile, which you mentioned, is a company's kind of take AI. You know, I'll give you a classic example. Oh, you know, we gave Copilot to all of our employees and said, hey, see if this helps you. So it's this sort of a broad-based, that's one profile. I personally have seen that that's not a winning profile in terms of really driving big impact. A second profile, you articulated it, is to pick specific use cases and say, hey, well, can AI have an impact on that workflow, right? Is there an ROI? And there's lots of examples at this point where companies have done that. They've laser focused on a workflow, they've applied AI, and the ROI is massive. I mean, I'll pick a simple one, content creation for education services. That might be one of them. So that I have seen as a winning profile, but you put a third profile on the table, which is you can run that play. You can say, look, I had use case A, B, C, D. They were all successful. They, you know, but a company that says, I want to now do this at scale and really integrate it. I'll just say, you know, I'm going to be an AI native kind of company. You know, I'm really going to have a strategy that AI is part of a majority of my workflows. I have not seen that yet in the wild, you know, on those. And so I'm curious, have you seen companies yet cross that Rubicon where they're getting beyond successful ROI use cases, which we definitely can find, and really somebody who has taken it to scale? What's your experience there?
Yeah, I think it is evolving. And I think that is something that we in IBM have been kind of very focused on, right? And there are concrete implications to that, which is, I mean, I would kind of very colloquially classify that as a platform strategy. I think if you look at scale in almost any other dimension in the industry, it is always enabled by a platform strategy. And so how do you build on a common technology foundation? How do you build AI-enabled business services that can be reused and consumed and composed into the assistance and experience that you want to deliver? So thinking about scale out from, instead of letting a thousand flowers bloom, you have to do that from a use case perspective, but at the same time, trying to impose some consistency in the programming models and the platforms, et cetera, becomes important. And that's something that we've been doing. And I think we are lucky in the sense that since we also build some of those platforms, WatsonX and so on and so forth, that gives us an intrinsic
advantage ability to do that, to focus. For sure, yeah.
An advantage. And I think what we've seen is that it has been quite successful. And when we look at the broader IBM and our various teams, whether it's in consulting or software or infrastructure, I think that's part of the learnings that we are working with our clients on, is evolve to a platform strategy that enables scale, turns experiments into actionable ROI-based outcomes, and scale that very quickly. And we have plenty of internal experience. For example, we spent a significant amount of time in building some of our agent assistant capabilities for a particular product. It took a year. We had to do everything from validate models to understand the right KPIs and so on and so forth. But once done, we could translate to 10 other products within the scope of a couple of months. And that kind of scale and that kind of thoughtfulness in the early stages is really important. And governance, I mean, I think that part of it cannot be understated, is important in terms of scale out.
So, you know, this concept of a North Star, where we want to get to having a platform in play that every organization in the company can leverage, we can repurpose some of the AI capabilities we've developed, I think is, you know, absolutely correct. I'd be curious on two things. So number one, again, I think for a lot of companies, that is a bridge too far for them right now. And I think at TSI's perspective, we'd say, look, you don't want to wait until you have all the answers for your perfect platform. You need to start figuring out where AI, you know, basically get your experiences with AI capabilities, start to deploy. Don't wait for everything to be perfect, and then, but understand that you're going to want to migrate. So I'm going to pause on that assertion. What would your coaching be to somebody?
You're absolutely right. I think AI is moving at a velocity where you can't sit and wait for a perfect answer. You have to be in the game, because there's value to be realized immediately. So completely agree. I think my point of view here is that a platform is not something that you acquire. A platform is something that you build.
Mm-hmm.
And so to your point, every step on the journey You start doing something, but beyond doing that something, you also look at, can it contribute to a platform?
Mm-hmm.
Can it be something that can be reused by others? And if you look at some of the technology like agentic, it is intrinsically a platform strategy because you build an agent. An agent can be composed to enable other experiences. Your agent becomes a part of a platform.
Mm-hmm.
A platform does not necessarily mandate a singular technology. I think we've seen that with things like hybrid cloud, where it's not one platform, it's multi-cloud, on-premises, different clouds, different SaaS services coming together to support that. But it is thoughtfully linked together. I think the same thing is going to be true of AI. And one of the mechanisms to do that is agentic, which is think about building agent. Agents composed into assistants that provide the value to a particular use case. But more importantly, those agents now can support other use cases, which kind of drives the scale out aspect that we just discussed. So you raise a really important point, which is a platform is not something you wait for. A platform is something that you enable in your organization by not only building these capabilities, by thoughtfully exposing them to other use cases and having some governance to make that happen.
Yep. So I have two more follow-up questions on this thread. So one of them is, I have a working thesis that the amount of disparate business processes in these, you know, enterprise companies, there's going to be a great rationalization there. I think AI is going to take a lot of complexity, because if you think about processes that exist within sales versus services versus product teams versus marketing teams versus finance, and everybody has their own individual systems supporting them, right? It's very fractured to a world where you do get closer to a platform that people are using common data. They're using, like say, common agents. There's more commonality. I think it's going to take some of this disparate complexity out, and we won't just have all of these individual processes that are running off of their own data to get their own answers. I'm curious your thoughts on that one.
I completely agree with your thesis there. I think one of the ways to make that actionable, at least the one that I've been pursuing and our organization has been pursuing, is to really start from a persona perspective, which is, given a persona in a process, what are the key needs? What are the upstream and downstream dependencies? And kind of capture that. Now, what that lets you do is identify the key assistants that you need to build, which then drives which are the data sources I need to orchestrate to provide effective assistance. And that kind of gives you that structured way of defining the capabilities, which then when you look at some other persona in a different process potentially, there's sharing that kind of emerges from that, because now you have a common taxonomy, you have a common catalog. And so you're spot on. I do see that discipline and the complexity of providing insight versus just flash out a dashboard with some data is going to drive exactly what you said, which is a level of convergence, a level of reuse, a level of consistency between processes. Absolutely.
Yeah, I think it's going to be one of the big ultimate benefits of this technology. And the other follow-up question I had was around the data side. And you know, so many companies, members that we talk to, in fact, we've polled on this. If you say, well, you know, what are the biggest friction points you have in deploying AI? Data issues, right, is the number one reason it comes up in, you know, poll, survey after survey. That's the thing holding us back. Now, I've talked to enough people on this where, you know, people say, look, you can't wait again until your data is perfect. And people have a tendency to overestimate how much data they need or how perfect the data they need before they can actually start to get some positive impact from AI capabilities. And so I'm curious, what coaching do you give to customers when they look at you and they say, well, I mean, I'd love to do this AI thing, but you just don't understand how messed up our data is.
No, I think that's a really important point, because I think 100% accuracy and all of the data and models and training and everything else that is needed to get to that is a journey.
Mm-hmm.
I think 30% is better than nothing. 60% is certainly better than 30, but it's a journey. And you have to evolve the data, you have to evolve the metadata, you have to evolve integration between systems, connection between contexts and different systems in a stepwise way. But my refrain has always been that you won't get there till you understand how it's being used.
Mm.
So you have to get started. You have to extract value. You have to understand. And that value might be a small amount. Mm-hmm. But if you do have a continuous improvement mindset versus a yes or no, this did not work kind of a mindset, then you get to the point that you made exactly, which is, I have a very specific context in which I can improve data. And the outcomes in improving that data are also measurable, which really can drive an organization in a positive way in terms of data quality improvements, in terms of the right integrations and other things that you need in terms of evolving data. So you can't wait. You have to move, because that is what makes you get to 100%.
You know, and I'll give you a very tangible example of this. If you look at using AI models, for example, to do something like revenue forecasting, and specifically, you know, renewal revenues are the best place to start, because you know. So when I ask TSIA members on this, I would say that that is ranging around anywhere from, you know, 40 to almost 50% of the members say, we are now leveraging AI models to do revenue forecasting. And they all have the same story, which is what you just articulated, which is, hey, we started out, the modeling wasn't, you know, perfect. It got better. But everyone, if they chip at it long enough, says, I'm at a place now where the AI models are giving me such better forecasting than I ever got before that, right, from my sales team, that I can't imagine going back, right? It would be like the dark ages. And so, again, my coaching to somebody is, if they haven't started that journey yet, it's like, look, you know, if you're now competing against people who are way better at predicting revenue than you are, and by the way, doing it much faster, you're already at a competitive disadvantage. So you have to get on that journey. And I think, again, there's so many tangible examples like that, where there's a very powerful use case. It's going to help you manage your business better or deliver your business better. And you can't just wait. Like you said, 30% is better than nothing, 60% is, you know, better. And eventually you'll get there where the model will be very, very well tuned.
And what it also helps you, I mean, just to add to your point, is in many cases, it goes back to the process context. It's not about the data for a task, but it is kind of the upstream and downstream connections. And we are finding, I mean, to your use case, there are very similar use cases. When we do things like agent assist, we want to help agents with factual information from history and other things to make their jobs better. Now, an interesting part of that is that there's a dependency not just on the data that you have available, but the information provided from the source, from the client. If they open a case that says, my system is down, there's only so much insight you can provide. But if you have more actionable information, if you have logs, if you have better error codes and so on and so forth, then you can help the support engineers do a much better job. How do you address that part of it? How do you collect better data? So it's not about data that you have, it's about data that you get. So I think some of these things you only learn by, and because you'll peek out in some, in terms of effectiveness at some point, and you start looking around the broader process as to how you'd make improvements. So those are the interesting side effects of the point that you mentioned.
Yeah, well, I'll build on that, because I'll give you an anecdote from a member, another large hardware company, a lot of different products in play. And you know better than I, the relationship between product engineering teams and support teams can at times be contentious, in the sense that support teams will say, look, I need this telemetry, right? And product teams will be like, you know, I don't have time to give you that message because I'm working on this feature, right? Well, listen to this story. So this hardware company deployed AI to improve support on certain products and predict, I think it was hardware replacements, I forget the exact use case, but had some real success, right? And other, so that, you know, basically costs went down to supporting those systems, et cetera. So other product teams came over and knocked on the door and they said, oh, we want to be part of that. And the support team said, no problem, but we need this telemetry in this format to feed the model. And it did what you're just talking about. It rationally, it created that downstream conversation. So now the product teams are willingly putting the right telemetry on the table in the right format for the support team. That, you know, before this whole AI model is in place, that wasn't happening.
Exactly.
So it's a beautiful thing.
Yep, it is. Absolutely. Couldn't agree more with you. That is a great example. I mean, I think that's exactly the spirit. I mean, I think that is the transformative potential of AI. It's not just about models. It's about that ecosystem that it transforms. So
yeah, absolutely. Exactly. So, you know, I want to change the topic just a little bit related to AI, and that is the fact that we know that AI is going to augment support professionals, and people say, well, hey, it's going to augment, not replace them. But honestly, from the chair I sit in, there's no doubt that AI agents are going to take some of the support activities off the table so that you don't have to have humans get involved. So how do you think support organizations should think about navigating this balance between the human touch and what we're doing versus the digital touch? Because again, there is going to be some impact here. It's going to change the way we're operating.
Yeah, I mean, I think you're absolutely right in the sense that the progression of AI certainly will address more and more tasks. I think as we move more and more towards things like AGI and some of the agentic models and so on and so forth, we are seeing the promise of what AI can deliver. But I think it causes an interesting thought in my head, right? I mean, the old adage that says there are known knowns, unknown knowns, known unknowns, and unknown unknowns.
Yeah.
Now, to me, that is a continuum because I think there are things that, like known knowns, that are very deterministic that you can certainly handle and AI would do a really good job of it. I think there are aspects of unknown knowns, which is the knowledge base that anyone is aware of, that AI can assist. Meaning that if you don't know about a particular problem, AI can help you go find that information so that you can do something effectively. And then you the creativity and the skills of our support professionals is in the latter two points, the known unknowns, which requires creativity, and the unknown unknowns, which is responding to critical situations in a dynamic fashion. Those, I don't think AI has yet the capabilities to handle that, or it has not been materially shown. I think it's very good at handling known knowns and potentially unknown knowns. But the rest of it is where a good support organization brings value to our clients. It is, there's a situation, you don't understand what's happening with the situation. It could be a lateral problem in some other component of the system or a connected system or a piece of software that's running on the system, if it's a hardware system or vice versa. Those are things that experience, lateral thinking, creativity bring to the table. And so to me, the value of AI is, can we take away the tasks that are mundane? Can we help our support teams solve problems that are innovative and that require this lateral thinking, the unknown unknowns? And how do we enable you to do that better? So it's not about, oh, your job is being replaced, or we're going to get to a point where AI can solve all of these problems. It could, but it's going to be a long time. I focus more on the fact that what is the real value that support provides to our clients? And that is in the category of the known unknowns and the unknown unknowns that we can help with. And to me, that is really the perspective I carry.
Mm-hmm. You know, just watching again, member companies deploy AI and how employees deal with that. One thing you said is AI has the ability to, you know, remove mundane tasks. I think one of the challenges with knowledge workers sometimes is that they, things that you might look at and I might look at and say, hey, that's actually kind of mundane. You know, they might say, that's core to what I do. That's really important. So, but that's part of the transformation I think a lot of knowledge workers have to go through, is to realize that what used to be considered value add really isn't. We can be done by AI, but there are other upstream things that are value add that you can now focus on. And so there is some mental shifts that have to occur there, I think, as people
That's a continuing journey, right? I mean, I think that things that were part of your daily workflow, which you got used to, you might still not have liked it, but you're waiting for a solution. I think some of those AI has started to address. So you're shifting right effectively in terms of the value that you provide. And yes, that is cause for concern. I think you have to address it culturally. You have to address it in terms of showing an outlook. And more importantly, I think you have to show the opportunity. What does taking away something that is mundane, what additional opportunities does it create? And knowledge creation, to me, is an important part of AI. And so when we talk about some of the support engineering functions, it's not about handling a ticket. It's about creating knowledge to ensure that additional problems of that same ilk are handled more effectively. Now, if you can lay out that roadmap of value, this is what SREs did, for example, in industry, right? It is not about managing operational dashboards. It's about ensuring that you create automation that the problem shall not repeat again. Mm-hmm. I think the same model applies broadly to support, which is, if we can take away some of the mundane aspects, does it open up opportunity to create value, create more content, create more automation, train models to do more effective things? Same persona. They have the subject matter expertise to excel in that. We just have to continue to maintain that facet and that important facet of their role.
Well, I think that the premium that is going to be out there in the future for knowledge workers, you put this on the table actually, is There's a difference between knowledge aggregation and net new knowledge creation. That's where the value is going to be. And I'll give you the simple anecdote. I'm in the business of research. And researchers could basically provide a lot of value by just aggregating a lot of information like this data point that and putting it together for somebody and saying, look, you probably never saw all this in one place. And there was value in that. And right, and maybe putting some perspective around it. But AI is going to do all that aggregation like that. So now as a researcher, your value has to be, well, what new knowledge and insight can I create from all of this aggregation? And that sounds simple and it sounds super fun, but I'm telling you, it's not super easy. Shift.
No, it is not easy. That has to be inculcated into the culture of an organization.
Yeah, for sure. So it's going to be an interesting journey. So, you know, I'll give you one final question because I was keeping an eye on the clock here and I would be respectful of your time. You know, when you look at how AI ultimately is going to transform support services, what are some of the big changes you think will be happening over the, let's just pick, you know, three to 5 years? How is support going to look very different down the road?
Interesting question. I think I might be guilty of confirmation bias here because I live this dream. But I think in 3 to 5 years, AI will be in almost every process that we do in support. Mm-hmm. So it's not going to replace the insights that our engineers deliver, but it is going to provide an assistive function at the least as we go forward, and more so. Mm-hmm. Now, I think the adoption is going to be certainly a function of the complexity and the risk. I mean, for complex mission-critical systems that have very, very high SLAs, I think an assistive mode of AI is perhaps going to be the general norm versus a complete autonomous aspect of AI.
Yeah.
I think the one area that I think we need to evolve more in the context of AI is understanding exceptions more than the norm. I think when you look at summarization, when you look at some of the other AI techniques, it picks more of common patterns. But I think in many of these systems, especially with things, I mean, the value of support, if you make a change, how do you roll it back? Are you looking at exceptional cases, edge cases, et cetera, et cetera? And at least in my experience so far, AI is good at finding common patterns. It's kind of a little bit more difficult to find some of the edge cases. There's a lot of work going on in that regard, but I think that is going to start becoming more pervasive because to your earlier point, insights. Mm-hmm. If I want to go from place A to place B, I can look up a map to find out what it is.
Yep.
But if someone who tells me that, hey, don't go through that part of town because it might be unsafe or there's a bridge closure or whatever it is, mm-hmm. that's insight that is important. That's an edge case, but it is critical to adoption. So, I mean, simply put, I think AI is going to be everywhere. I mean, I think that's a given. There's lots of intrinsic capability. I think it's going to cause the transformations that are going to make it self-sustaining in certain ways. So it is going to be there everywhere. But I think there's going to be continued evolution of insights that would be needed to be able to progressively make bigger and bigger impact in terms of how support is mm-hmm. delivered.
Yep.
And it makes sense. I mean, is that?
Yeah, it does. And I, you know, the assertion that AI is going to be everywhere. I mean, I also deeply believe that based on all the conversations I've been in. And I also think, and I say this on this podcast all the time, it's moving faster than any technology I've ever seen move in terms of you know, adoption and deployment. And again, so that's why I think if you're a professional in the technology industry, you have got to be getting your head wrapped around this. You've got to be understanding how it's going to change your function, the way your workflows are, or how your particular department works. It's not something that you have this long runway that you're like, I'll worry about that in a couple of years. So it's going to be everywhere. It's going to be everywhere faster than any other technology we've seen. And I think in many ways, it's almost hard to predict what it's going to look like, whether you're talking about support or customer success or anything, because I do think it's going to just dramatically change the way that we're working.
Yes, it is. And I think there's, to your point, the responsibility of an individual to understand the context of AI used for the particular work they do to the point that you're making, that's absolutely true. But there's also an organizational responsibility to be able to kind of encourage that. I mean, we have, for example, centers of excellence. We hold office hours. We have idea generation sessions so that people who are in that role can internalize the value of AI and come up with suggestions to how AI could be used. So it's not someone telling them, here's AI, but rather here's what I want AI to do for you. So all of these things have to come together. Really good point.
Yep, absolutely. Yeah, no, change management, employee change management is going to be really important over the next couple of years here, for sure.
Yep. Yep.
Well, hey, Bob, I really appreciate you coming into Tectonic today. Enjoyed the conversation. I learned a lot, as I always do. We have smart people come on, so that was fantastic. And I always end these episodes here with a question of the day. And my question of the day for our audience is your company leveraging the AI capabilities that are already below the waterline to create the best support experience possible? Cheers, everybody.